I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran. And this is Radio versus the Martians.
So it's like when you see those old Silver Age comics where the bad guy kidnaps the entire team and they're all in their individual tubes. Which, those things are torturous. You really think about them for a little bit where you can't even sit down. And you don't know how long you're going to be locked in there by Dr. Light or whoever it is that's kidnapped you. That's fucking torturous. Because that was the way when you played The Sims that you would make somebody go mad. That you would go into build mode.
Trap them into one spot.
Yeah, you would build walls around them, very small, so that they couldn't even pass out. They couldn't collapse and sleep. Or they would just stand in one place, be unable to move, unable to sleep, well past the point that if they were left to their own devices, would have just collapsed on the floor and slept. So they're just standing there, peeing on themselves. And when you let them go, they're broken. You remember that? You ever do this when you find yourself, you turn into like the video game Dr. Mengele?
I never played Sims enough to want to become, an evil dictator.
But you do sort of become like a god. That right. You are this person outside of their world who can put in a code and give them money or can make them do things that make them unhappy against their will, that can force them into conversations. You can say, well, you know what? You're going to have a gravel floor inside your house. And you can just do that. Or you can put them in a pool and then take the ladder out where they swim until they die.
This just reminds me, I'm sure both of you have seen this. There was a claymation movie in the 80s about the adventures of Mark Twain. Have you seen this clip of it?
No.
Is this the claymation one?
This is the claymation one.
I have vague memories of that as a kid.
So I think the whole thing is pretty unremarkable other than being a pretty early all claymation feature film.
Okay.
Which doesn't happen a lot because it's so expensive and those things never make money.
Time consuming too.
It's like only until Wallace and Gromit did claymation stuff actually really start making money and where you could make a feature film and be economically, like, make money off of making it. But this one is this, like, it's a couple kids following Mark Twain. They're on, like, a time machine. They're going around time, and they're meeting all these weird people. And there's a scene wherein they end up in this dark land, and they meet the devil. and the devil is basically playing a game of Sims. He was like, he has all this sinister monologue, and he's creating these little tiny beings in his world, and then creating things to intentionally destroy them. And he's like, then I can create them again.
Yeah.
It's fucking disturbing.
I mean, it is. It's essentially the Stanford Prison Experiment. Yeah. And you play around with that because you suddenly have this kind of sick power. But
I can crush you.
But the thing is, you do that when you're young and you're kind of fucked up and you're deciding what it is to be an adult. And you're essentially in a kind of solipsistic world where you are literally the only real person and a bunch of imaginary people are running around that you can do whatever you want to. So, you know, there was a bunch of like DLCs that you could add onto The Sims. I think I was playing this with my friend Tim, who's one of our Patreon supporters, by the way. Hey, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
And we were just fucking with Sims, which is what you always end up doing. Like when you turn on all the natural disasters when you play SimCity. You just kind of want to see what happens. But there was this one add-on, I forget, like a DLC, where when a character became really, really sad, this like supernatural clown creature would appear.
Oh, God.
And he was a sad clown. I don't know if he was there to cheer you up or if he was like the living physical embodiment of your sadness. But he would do stuff like try to make balloon animals and they'd pop and there'd be a lot of sad trombone sounds that would follow this clown around. But the thing is, it was really hard to get out of a funk because this clown would also make you sad because he's following you around. And Tim and I decided we were going to kill the clown. We didn't know if it was even possible, but we knew we had to kill our Sim to kill him. So it was like, you know, this is one of those, this is one of those trolley problems where we're like, okay,
what is the least moral choice you can make?
which track is the clown on? So we basically locked him in a room with no doors, no windows, no escape. Built a ring of gas stoves, turned them all on.
Oh my God.
And then lit a fireplace that we had. All of them went up into a ring of fire that kept shrinking, 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 and getting closer and closer to this guy and the clown.
What are you, a Bond villain?
Yeah. Yes. But we were able to kill the clown. Whew. It was the same thing, too. I think we at one point built a house because we had a bunch of DLC stuff that would let you build something very much like the Munsters or the Addams Family house. Mm-hmm. And we're like, well, we want a spooky house, so we need a bunch of graves. So we got to kill a bunch of people to get graves and put them in the yard. So the way you kill people in The Sims was that you would build a swimming pool, you invite people over to swim, and then you take the ladder out of the pool away. And eventually they run out of energy and they drown and you get a grave. The problem is once you punch a bunch of graves in the front yard of any Sim, people get distracted by those graves and just start crying at the graves all the time. And it isn't just like a decoration anymore. It's like a thing that is making people constantly sad because there are literally bodies buried all around their house.
There's a darkness to these early video games that Sims was never my thing, but like this, it leads you down a mental path of, I need to accomplish this. What travesty, what like atrocity can I commit to make this happen?
Like, I have a goal and I don't care how many people I kill to accomplish this goal. And some of my goal is mostly just satisfying my curiosity. And these are the kind of ways that only like munitions dealers and economists talk. Like, truly the most vile, emotionally and like morally bankrupt people on earth who are like, how do I make this line on a chart go up? Oh, there'll be less people. How many people am I willing to sacrifice for that? I mean, it's really scary because you realize that a lot of this is like a fucked up version of the Ferris wheel speech from The Third Man with Orson Welles.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Have you seen that movie?
That's a great fucking movie.
That is a brilliant fucking movie. Orson Welles is really only a supporting actor in it, but I still think of it as an Orson Welles movie. But Orson Welles is this guy who, in the aftermath of World War II, gets like a cache or a large shipment or a huge amount of like penicillin.
But are they in Prague or are they in Berlin? They're in one of the bombed out cities.
Yeah.
Right in the first 5 years after the Second World
War. Yeah, things are starting to get rebuilt and stuff. And he sees opportunity, which under capitalism is like, oh, people are hurting. I can make money off of this. So basically, he has a bunch of penicillin that falls into his hands. But he realizes he can make a lot more money and have more sales if he dilutes that penicillin and sells it to more people, but also making it less effective, that it might not actually save people's lives. The problem is that when you do that, people start dying, and in a just world, and maybe even in this one that he's living in, the cops start looking for him, and he has to fake his death. And this is a conversation he has with the Joseph Cotton, the main character in the movie, on a Ferris wheel, where he's just found out that Orson Welles has faked his own death, and he's talking to him, and they're at the top of the Ferris wheel, and he's just like, hey, man, I was going to cut you into this. We're good. We're all school buddies, right? And he says, listen, and he's just like, what is wrong with you? How could you do this? You knew you were killing people. Don't you believe in God or goodness or anything in the world? Do you have any kind of heart or soul at all? And he's like, listen, man, it's just business. You know, look out the window there. See all those little dots moving around down there from this Ferris wheel car? And he goes, how much would it really bother you if one of those dots fell down and stopped moving forever? What if you got $20,000 tax-free for every one of those dots that fell down? How many dots would you be willing to spare? And it is quite honestly, more than any other scene in a lot of movies, you've seen a lot of movies with like fucked up villains. You know, people like Thanos kills half the universe. But this is the scene of any movie I've ever seen that I think really depicts evil. The sort of evil that is actually in the real world, where it's a guy making a decision looking at a spreadsheet about human life and saying, this money is more important to me than I can spare some of them, whatever. And he even says they're better off dead. Their lives weren't that great.
I mean, it's the McNamara thing. It's the Robert McNamara thing, right? Like the guy who became the man who said, we're going to collect the data, put stuff on spreadsheets and basically make decisions that will increase the number of lives that we take, essentially, right?
Yeah, the new Secretary of Defense during the Vietnam War.
And he got his cut on at the end of the Second World War by doing data for bombers and stuff. I just watched a speech about an author. There was something that they called it McNamara's morons. Have you heard about this, Mike?
No.
There was a program in the middle of the Vietnam War that they, for a few test markets or whatever, they had lowered the IQ threshold for putting people into the military, the draft, basically. And this meant that there was a whole wave of people who were, by the standards of clinical psychological health today, these people would consider to be, like, incapable of taking care of themselves, right? Like, the kind of people who, they just were born with such a low intelligence that they're not considered.
I mean, to the degree that IQ is kind of junk science.
Sure,
anyways.
Sure. But the result of this was, he's like, oh, well, they can, surely these, he's, because he saw a TV program about, like, an idiot savant, about someone who couldn't really function in their life, but they could do one thing really, really well. And we've all seen this stuff on TV. And he got the idea of saying, like, hey, we can take these people, and if we just train them to do one thing, even though the other parts of my life, they won't be that useful, we can train them to do one thing and it'll be amazing. And it led to all of these terrible, terrible outcomes of the people who were in combat situations, who couldn't make the right decision, or were scared, or just didn't know, and caused their deaths and other people's deaths, all because McNamara was like, this is a good idea, right? We'll just get all these people who don't meet the criteria. We'll lower the threshold. We'll throw them in the meat grinder and see if it works.
Yeah, he's not the one whose village is going to get burned. I mean, that's always the thing with that. But
that guy's so fucking
evil.
But
I think evil really comes about when you are able to turn somebody into a line of numbers. If you're able to take large numbers of human lives and not think of them as people anymore.
And the sort of touchstone I have for this, I'm going to take a bit of a left turn on this, is the 1998 Leonardo DiCaprio vehicle, The Beach. If you guys remember that.
Is that an Alex Garland movie?
It is an Alex Garland. Alex Garland
book?
Written, and yeah, it was
Danny Boyle movie.
Danny Boyle. It's weird I get those two guys mixed. Did Alex Garland write the script to 28 Days Later?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
And Danny Boyle directed.
Okay.
And
yep.
Same with The Beach.
Okay.
So, because it's Alex Garland, and I do kind of want your guys' opinion on Alex Garland after this, but because of Alex Garland, there is actually some really interesting ideas. I really think The Beach is actually a pretty underrated movie. It's not a perfect movie by any real sense, but there is particularly this moment where all these guys are living sort of like this hippie commune sort of druggy culture on the beach outside of any government. You know, one side of the island is people growing drugs, and then the other side of the island is this little commune. And there's a shark attack, and somebody is grievously hurt. And he's sitting in the tent. They're not willing to find any medical help for this guy. So he's sitting there just in pain. And there's one guy who's trying to tend him, trying to heal him and everything. And everyone is just like sad and down because there's this guy who's screaming in pain. So what they decide to do is take that guy, put him in a tent half a mile away where they can't hear him. And now everything's great. It's back to a party. Everyone's having good. And there's this one guy's like, guys, this guy is still in pain. Like, he is in agonizing pain. And that's the thing for the third man thing of like being on top of the Ferris wheel is it's that distance.
Just enough
distance that I don't have to think directly about it. And then you can turn that switch. And it's just, that's where it's in that distance. When you can't bridge that distance emotionally, you just turn that switch and you're fine. That's where that evil, I think, really is.
But the thing that scares me in that sort of moment is that the thing that everyone else is also refusing to look at is that they could be that person who's bitten one day and they're looking at a window of what the end of their life might look like. That this is the true moral nature of the place that they live.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think that's the part of the big theme. It's just now coming back to me. I think I've seen it only once, but where the idea that the only way that they can have this paradise is if you have this other thing that's an evil happening, which is just like a gang, basically an armed gang of drug dealers who are like ruthless and who kill, right. And they're in it for the money. if you can have those two things in stasis, they can have their party island, right?
Yeah.
At what cost?
That you have to not think about what those drug dealers do, these guys that are walking around a jungle with AK-47s and stuff, selling drugs to God knows what, you know, whatever. If they're killing rich kids, whatever. but I mean, again, this is the sort of thing. I think they were growing weed, which is really weird.
Were growing weed, but I think the metaphor is still the same.
Yeah,
basically.
I just have a hard time thinking that weed is something that people murder over.
Used to be.
It's just very strange. I don't know. And that's even pre-legal. It just, like, imagine that if you're willing to kill a whole bunch of people, you're going to be making more money than you do over weed. And it's just, I don't know. I don't know a lot about drug culture. But again, this idea that there has to be some kind of Faustian bargain that goes with any paradise. That if you're going to have something good, it's because there's some dark secret, like in The Giver, that is going on. And there's a part of me that just kind of rejects that idea, that you don't have to have a monstrous thing that lives in the basement that is tortured and feels all your pain for you in order to have a good life or make things better for people. Because it just seems like a lot of times people use that kind of metaphor as a way to justify not trying to make the world better or just accepting a status quo. It's like, well, you know what? Of course people die living in tent cities, but you know what? That, you know, if we tried to make it better, it would only get worse. And it's like, if you know, you have to make a Faustian bargain with the monster. That's the only way you get the beach city, and you got to let the guy die and bleed out because he got bitten by a shark.
I don't know. I wanted to ask this question of you, Mike, and Dave, you can chime in if you want to. This is clearly one pitched at Mike, because I'll say it. Right. So I had a coworker of mine, actually former guest of ours, Micah Crable, who was on our Blade Runner podcast. We used to have work together, so we had super long, ridiculous cyclical conversations about things, and this was basically maybe toward the end of the second Bush's second term. So it was a lot about like all the shit that ended up happening as a result of our two invasions, right? And the longer it went, the more you were like, well, this was a mistake from the beginning and it's only getting worse, right?
Yeah. But we knew that.
Micah's a really he likes Winston Churchill. He likes to read stuff about Winston Churchill.
You have to read targeted Winston Churchill to like Winston Churchill.
I'm not going to speak for Micah. He can email us if he wants to.
Winston Churchill India famine.
But he had the point. He was saying, oh well, you know, the thing of war and is clearly just is an endemic thing to humanity, not just in this age, but in every other age that humans have been there. And he's like, well, what if you just need that in every generation? Is you just need a place for the fucking psychopaths to go and kill people?
He's writing The Purge. That's what he's doing. It's this idea that we are inherently monsters, I don't believe that.
Are we always going to have people who will be the equivalent of Nazis in a population? People
if we make a world like this, yes.
People because of their upbringing, having bad parents because of their
heritage.
Because of their genetic heritage, because of their upbringing, because of their material circumstances. Aren't you always going to have someone who grows up and being like, when I grow up, I'm going to be a fucking super soldier and I'm going to kill everyone?
But again, the material conditions is the key to that. It's like, is it somebody's...
But I don't think it's the only thing.
It shapes so much of what we are.
Of course it does.
The world that you're grown into does shape who you are, and it normalizes things. And if you live in a world where just seeing a homeless person die on the, you see a guy just sleeping on the ground and we don't go, that person needs help, we should do something to help them, because we've normalized the idea that some people, well, you know what, some people are just homeless. I mean, those are the things, the idea that a rich person is going to get a better legal defense than a poor person, regardless of how innocent or guilty they are. We just normalize it. What? There's a massive forest fire season every year and the sky just turns orange and you just can't go outside. Hope you're not homeless. That's just the way it is. See, the thing is, the same thing, like you go into an arena and you get to fight prisoners of war with they have blunted weapons and you have real ones, or I get to kill a giraffe for an applauding crowd. That stuff is normal. I'm gonna go to a lynching and have a picnic,
right?
I mean
the thing that I'm more interested in, we're completely aligned on the idea that the material circumstances around people's lives shape them in ways that they cannot control,
yeah,
because the forces are so big.
But
I'm also thinking is that I think forever there have been rapists. I think forever there have been people that have that have something that's tweaked in their head and have said, hey, I want to fuck, and I don't care about decency anymore, so I'm going to, and I think there will always be that. The question will be is how adept are we, can we make a society that is able to accommodate those problems and help people with these things that are tweaked in their head and help them mesh better and help
you have
them
to create a society
other.
That gives a shit about people.
Right.
Well, that's ultimately what it is. If you're used to a society, not just that I'm going to be the altruistic one and no one else cares, but you create an entire society that systemically cares about people, then people are going to feel cared for. And they're also, by extension, going to also have more empathy for people. It's not something that you have a lot of control over. So if you really want to do it, you just have to create a society that gives a shit about people instead of creating a society where everything is a competition for resources, where a couple people are going to win and most people are going to lose. And you're like, well, I'm really sad that that happened to that person, but at least it wasn't me. I'm going to, you know, trip the guy who's going to be eaten by the lion and not me, that kind of stuff. And I think that when we have that kind of mentality and it gets even into the brains and minds and mouths of otherwise good people, you justify it. A bunch of people watched a dude get strangled to death on a subway. And what did the fucking Democratic governor of New York say? Well, you know, actions have consequences. How the fuck do you say that about a murder? Actions have consequences. Like, I had a fucking mental breakdown. And speaking as a guy who has certainly my share of like anxiety attacks and has my share of depression and imposter syndrome and got a lot of other things. Imagine if I became homeless, as the saying goes, there, but for the grace of God, go I, I could be that guy. I've cried in an emergency room before because no one would fucking help me. And I just imagine if I was on a subway.
Yeah, well, just imagine your worst day. You might do on your very worst day.
I'm homeless, and I can't imagine my life ever getting better, and just going, I'm just going to fucking yell at a bunch of people because I need a bunch of people to acknowledge that I exist in this moment.
Yeah.
Even though I know it won't make me feel better, even though I know it won't make me my life better, but just to scream at a bunch of people about how shitty your life is, just to make your existence noticeable to somebody, even if after I'm done yelling, I'm going to get off the subway and they're going to try to forget about me and they're going to try not to stare at me. I can imagine that. And then some fucking jarhead asshole chokes you to death. And you're like, well, I'm in danger because I was made uncomfortable. I was taken out of my comfort zone that I wanted to look at my phone. And instead some guy who smelled bad started yelling. I mean, you know, I don't think this sort of activity is inevitable. It's like, what did somebody say once? They said, like, if everyone is just thrown into the middle of the ocean, you could be convinced that drowning is human nature.
Hmm.
You know, it's, and I don't mean to make this like a depressing conversation, but no. I have a lot of depressing conversations lately.
No, and of course I knew that we would end up veering into this. I'm just
sorry, Dave.
No, it's just
hi. How's it going?
I'm just thinking we. It is a thing in our fiction, and it is a thing in our myths and our mythology that, like, we elevate the violent man, the person who's able to do violence, and we have, you know, we have many civilizations and thousands of years worth of culture that glorifies it and glorifies this and normalizes it and makes heroes and mythologizes these sorts of things. So you could have the like David Horowitz thing of like, well, war is inevitable or whatever, blah blah blah, which I don't believe.
Who say that are people who make money off of war.
Right. This is the thing that I struggle with is I don't think war is inevitable. I think we just created institutions that
make it inevitable.
Recircling and making those conditions happen again, and it becomes, you know, status and wealth fighting over elites. I think that's what it is. I do, however, think. I think we'll always have a problem, even if you did have a crazy utopia, a Federation utopia,
that you'd still get like a Dahmer.
You would still get a Dahmer,
yeah.
Or you would still get people who are, if even if you're not a Dahmer, the kind of person who thinks that it's who just bullies, but people who are bullies, and not because their economic circumstance fuck them, not even necessarily because their parents didn't do a great job. Maybe their parents did as best as they could, and this kid's brain's been flipped. I mean, yeah. I'm from the parent of a kid who is not neurotypical. I for sure know that there are just some things that are out of your hands. Mm-hmm. There are just some things that are totally out of your hands in terms of you, the person who's in the society, and you, the parents of this person, is trying to be like, well, how do I, you know, how do I like prop you up? How do I try to like support you in ways that'll put, that'll push this? I firmly believe that, you know, if a Jeffrey Dahmer had parents that sacrificed, that bled and sacrificed for him and helped him, he wouldn't have killed and fucked heads. Yeah. I firmly believe that.
But I mean, if we lived in a society, not just his parents, but sometimes people become fucked up in part because of their parents. But I'm
right, just saying.
If you
this is part of Casey's gambit, and you could easily probably argue me down to say that, but the position that I have to take is I think that crucial step of human beings supporting each other can actually do amazing shit.
Yeah,
that's what I care about.
If Jeffrey Dahmer was born into the United Federation of Planets, they probably would have noticed something wrong with him very early on and gotten him help, and not in the sort of fixing way that I think a lot of right-wingers would have, is that sort of Spartan throw him on the pile of dead, deformed people kind of bullshit. But say, no, there's a place in society for everybody. Some people are dangerous. You just get him in a place that isn't a hellhole, that won't make him worse, that gets him the help you have to the degree that you can help him. And you also, if a parent, if you see those sorts of signs, can get that person help, and you're not afraid that this child that you love, regardless of whatever their problems and help that they might need that are probably out of your ability to meet those needs, that they're not going to be thrown into like a dungeon for their entire life.
Right.
And the fear of that, because I don't know, I think the thing with people like Dahmer is a lot of people, after the fact, it's not, oh, I had no idea. I think a lot of people are like, oh, God, that one thing I saw once was more important than I thought it was. Yeah. But, you know, no, I don't know if Dahmer was inevitably going to be the person that he was. This is a pop culture podcast, by the way.
Welcome to Radio versus the Martians. We're here to talk about comic books. Radio versus the Martians is hosted by Mike Gillis and Casey Doran. This podcast is recorded in beautiful Valverde in Seattle, Washington. Our chief engineer is Casey Dorn, and our editor is Mike Gillis. Our original theme music is written and performed by James Wetzel. Special thanks to Sam Mulvey, Rob Kelly, James Wetzel, Paul Rue, Tobiah Panshin, Scott Kramer, Kyle Hepworth, and Todd Maxfield Matsumoto. Please take the time to rate and review our show on iTunes and Stitcher, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And if you'd like to support the show financially, please consider becoming one of our Patreon subscribers. Even just $1 a month gives you access to exclusive episodes. And you can always find us online at RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Should have gone to the police, you know. You ought to leave this thing alone.
Have you ever seen any of your victims?
You know, I never feel comfortable on these sort of things. Victims? Be melodramatic. Look down there. Would you really feel any pity if one of those dots stopped moving forever? If I offered you £20,000 for every dot that stopped, would you really, old man, tell me to keep my money? Or would you calculate how many dots you could afford to spend? Free of income tax, old man. Free of income tax. The only way you can save money nowadays.
A lot of good your money will do you in jail.
That jail's in another zone. There's no proof against me. Besides you.